Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. So this is episode 41 with me, your host, Francesca. So today's episode is a little bit different because I wanted to share a bit about my own experience of perimenopause so far, my own journey through it so far at age 45. I know how overwhelming and confusing perimenopause can feel, especially when, you know, there's so many women that they may have heard of perimenopause, but they don't actually know what's happening in their bodies on a sort of biological level and then what impact that has on them emotionally, physically, you know, cognitively. And of course, that's the reason I started this podcast, is because that's exactly what I wanted to help people with. And it's what I do in my one-to-one practice. But I wanted the podcast because I wanted people to be able to listen to something for free, easily accessible, just, you know, reach more and more women, basically, not just the ones that come to me for one-to-one help, which is, of course, a different kind of service. It's personalized and it's kind of digging into the person's issues and solving it from their point of view. But the empowerment is where it all starts, is knowing what's happening, knowing what we can do to support those things, those changes, because they're natural, they're inevitable, but we can manage them and support them so that the symptoms of those changes are significantly minimized. So that's what obviously I do for myself, because I have the knowledge and it's what I live and breathe and do every single day. But, you know, it's still nice to talk about my experience of perimenopause so far, because none of us are, what's the word, brain fog. None of us are exempt. That's not the word I was looking for, but it kind of describes what I mean, from this happening to us. Even if we have the best habits, we're still going to experience something. So I just wanted to talk you through my own journey today. And, you know, not just as a practitioner, but as a woman going through this myself. So I'll be talking about the symptoms I've experienced and when I started, you know, to notice things, and the things that have genuinely helped me, and how this journey has shaped the way that I support women I work with as well. So whether you're just starting to wonder if this might be perimenopause that you're in, or maybe you're in deep and you're feeling a bit lost, you're in the midst of it, the throes of it. And you've come to this episode, this podcast, and this is the first episode you're listening to, or whether you've listened to all of them and you kind of really do have a good understanding of what's going on. Either way, I hope this episode helps you feel more seen, more supported, more validated, and a little bit more empowered as well. So let's get into my personal experience so far and when it all started for me. So when I first started to notice changes, so kind of rewind a bit, let's say around 38, 39, I'd already changed my specialism within my practice in women's health, specifically women in their mid to late 30s upwards is where I decided to focus my specialism. So essentially that was perimenopause, because we know we're moving into it biologically from sort of 35 upwards. So I'd already been diving deep into everything perimenopause. And my specialism had naturally gone there from an original specialism in women's health, but then specifically making it about 35 upwards. So I already was in the world, but I just now started to really delve deeper into the actual changes of perimenopause, what that brings, what that means, and how to support it. So then I turned 40, hadn't noticed any changes at all. But very shortly after my 40th birthday, probably a few months in, I started to notice that my cycle length was now, well, for a few months, it had gone from my normal 28 days. And now maybe we were on month 3, let's say, of me being post 40-ish. But it was month 3 where I noticed I was, each cycle, the last 2 to 3 cycles had been 27 days. So I thought, oh, I wonder if this is the start of perimenopause for me, in that my, because one of the earliest signs is that reduction in length of your cycles by usually by sort of 1 day. at first, and then so on, sort of 2-3 days and so on. So I thought, okay, this must be my first thing. So I just thought, whatever, my periods are still the same, but I'm coming on every 27 days instead of 28. And then very shortly after that, within the same year, I think I've just turned 41 actually. And the next thing I noticed was that my sleep wasn't as easy to come by anymore. I'd always had quite like no trouble falling asleep, staying asleep. And I started to notice I was having a little bit trouble falling asleep at night, feeling a little bit anxious in the evenings as well. So the two things sort of came together. The anxiety was very, very new for me. I'd had on and off sleep issues, like as we all do over our life, right? You know, certain things come up and happen at any age that can impact your sleep. I'd already had a bout of like insomnia earlier on in my 30s for a few months for various reasons. So the sleep thing was annoying, but it wasn't like brand new, nothing that ever happened before. It hadn't ever happened before. But the anxiety was completely new. I've never been an outwardly anxious person. I've always been a little worrier. You know, I've been like that since I was a child. But in terms of sitting and feeling actually anxious, this was very new to me. So it caught me by surprise. And I remember sitting on the sofa one evening and just this wave of weird wave of fear just like washed over me. And I sat there thinking, oh my God, the world's going to end. And I just suddenly felt really awful. And there was absolutely no reason for it in that moment other than just sitting on the sofa. And it literally felt like it washed over me. And that was happening most evenings and therefore also impacting my sleep. The main sleep thing was that I was waking up around 3 every night and I just couldn't get back to sleep for sometimes hours. Sometimes it was an hour, sometimes it was 2 hours. And then, you know, I was getting back to sleep maybe 6 o'clock and just my alarm going off at 7. So those are the first sorts of things. So the anxiety really caught me by surprise. And it still does because it comes up from time to time. But I'll tell you in a moment how I ended up evolving past the sleep and anxiety issues. But yeah, so those were the first things. And then noticing that my cycle was 27 days instead of 28. When I started to notice the sleep issues and the anxiety issues, I thought, okay, it's now time for me to really look at my supplements regime. You know, what would I tell a client to do? I always, whenever I, you know, start to experience certain symptoms or issues, I will always start by saying, what would you tell a client? Pretend you're not you. This is somebody else. They've come to you. What would you do for them? What would you recommend for them? Because when it's yourself, it's so easy to just maybe ignore it, not do anything about it. So I said, right, okay, if I was a client, I would say, this is possibly the start. You're in the early stages of perimenopause. As a result, you're starting to experience some sleep and anxiety issues, potentially because cortisol is going up now, maybe because progesterone is starting a little decline, which is the first thing, the first of those sex hormones to change, is that we have that decline in progesterone early on. Maybe your estrogen's the same. Maybe there's not really much change with estrogen as yet, as in maybe it's not on its erratic roller coaster yet. Maybe it's definitely not declining or it's too early. But you're probably having a little decline in progesterone. You're probably still ovulating every month. You're probably still making progesterone, but you might not be making enough of it. And if your cycles have gone down by one day, then you have not, you know, it's not massively significant, but you have one less day a month with progesterone, which is going to be new for your body. Your cycles have always been 28 days. You'd have had a little bit longer with progesterone. So I would tell that client, it's time to have a look at your sleep, your sort of evening routine. Have a look at your morning routine, because these two things have a huge impact on our abilities to fall asleep, stay asleep, have a restorative sleep. Also, they have an impact on mood and particularly anxiety. And then we'd also want to be looking at some stress management, sort of nervous system support for that anxiety that's creeping in at night, which again could be the higher cortisol, which is a result of the lower progesterone, usually kicks cortisol up a gear because progesterone is very calming. It's anti-anxiety, it's anti-stress, helps us deal with stress. So it's kind of leaving me a little bit less resilient. Then I would also be thinking about how I could support that person with supplements. So magnesium glycinate, for example, would be the first thing to come in. At the time, I was probably already taking that because I've taken it for so many years and I swear by it, but I probably increased it. And I might have added in at that time, I think I remember adding in glycine. So you've got magnesium glycinate, which is magnesium attached to a glycine molecule, hence the name magnesium glycinate form. But we can also take glycine separately. And studies have shown that 3 grams, which is 3,000 milligrams of glycine taken in the evening with your magnesium, or on its own, but preferably with your magnesium, has been shown to be really supportive for calming and helping to support good sleep, the nervous system, and reduce anxiety. So that's what I would tell the client. So that's what I did for myself. Okay, let's look at your evening and morning routines. Are you having a nice wind down time in the evening before bed, an hour before bed, let's say, or are you just watching TV right up until bedtime, maybe some, you know, good gritty crime drama, but it's actually quite stressful at a time in your life when you're moving into a time where your hormones are starting to change for the first time, and it's actually leaving you a bit less resilient to this sort of stuff in terms of how it impacts your brain, basically. So I looked at that. I thought, okay, so I started stopping TV a little bit earlier, leaving my partner to it if he wanted to, and then going into the other room and just in very dim lighting, almost darkness, just with a little sort of, I've got like a Himalayan salt lamp, so really nice and dim. I've already brushed my teeth, cleaned my face, creamed my skin and everything. And now I'm ready to just do some gentle yin yoga poses, some particularly ones that help you settle down for sleep, which you can look up on YouTube. At the time, I probably looked up on YouTube as well, specific poses that help restore, you know, get you ready for a good night's sleep, like forward folds, for example. Really nice for that child's pose, things like that. So I was doing those things, and I was doing a little bit of deep breathing, just the 4-6 breathing, which I really like, in through a count of four, out to a count of six for a few minutes. Maybe I had some meditation music on as well. And then I would just get myself into bed. And that really changed the game for my sleep. It really, really helped. The other thing was making sure I was getting up and outside first thing in the morning, because that natural daylight, which you've probably heard me say before if you've listened to previous episodes, particularly about sleep, the natural daylight exposure within kind of 20 to 30 minutes of waking is really important to regulating your circadian rhythm, which supports your stress system and which then supports your sleep. Staying asleep, helping you fall asleep, and staying asleep and having a restorative sleep. So that would have been, those are the first things I did, and they were so, so helpful. The changes in my cycle are kind of part of the natural moving into perimenopause and transition through. It's just what happens. But the sleep and anxiety are symptoms of those changes. And so I wanted to really address those. It's just the change in my cycle gave me that clue. So the shortening of the cycle by one day gave me the clue that maybe I have less progesterone at this time when I move very gently into perimenopause. This was age 41. So then I managed to get a handle on the sleep and anxiety, and everything was kind of fine after that. Then came, so this is, I've said before, perimenopause symptoms and changes and issues evolve throughout the span of perimenopause. If we're moving into it from late 30s, early 40s, and we're getting to menopause kind of anywhere from maybe 48, 49, 50, 51, 54, depends on the person. That is a long time, and that is all perimenopause until you reach menopause itself. And symptoms, changes, issues, they evolve throughout. So I got rid of the sleep and anxiety issues. My cycles were still down to the 27 days. I was fine with that as long as I had the handle on my sleep and anxiety. Next, maybe about 6 months, a year later, I really can't remember, I started to notice some shifts in my mood. I was starting to feel a little bit overwhelmed too easily for my liking. I started to notice a few shifts and changes in my confidence as well. Confidence in my work as well. I think when I was much younger, in my earlier 30s, I wouldn't say I was more driven. I think I literally just had more confidence to drive the business. Whereas I was starting to feel a bit, oh no, you know, I can't do that. I was sort of scared to do things, scared to say things. This is where that sort of perimenopause mindset shift can take place, where we can start to have this change in our confidence or change in our identity. It's kind of like, oh, I don't feel I can do that. But then on the flip side of that, moving into your 40s and through your 40s is actually, which has now become the case for me, becomes really empowering and shifts your mindset in really empowering ways. So once I got through the kind of changes in how I felt confidence wise and my identity and things, I came out the other side of that feeling so much more confident to say what I mean, to say what I actually think, to answer honestly, you know, give my genuine, honest opinions when asked, rather than just trying to sort of people please or make people feel better and not actually give them the truth and speak my truth as well. So learning to say no when I meant no, rather than yes, just because I didn't want to let somebody down, but then I let myself down by saying yes. Learning that no was a complete sentence. I didn't have to say no because just say no, that doesn't work for me. And actually realizing that people don't mind that. They're quite happy to hear your truth, actually, especially if they're real people who should be in your life and, you know, good people that love you. So that was really, really liberating. And then I also started to have that sort of mindset shift with my business, in that actually I know stuff that can help other women, and I want to share this with other women. I need to share this with other women. And that gave me the drive to sort of push my business and overcome that lack of confidence. So I think what I'm trying to say is we can move into this feeling of, I just don't feel like myself anymore. I don't feel as confident as I did anymore. And I can't quite put my finger on what or why. And that is really common. But we can come out the other side of that, particularly if we address it and work on it. We can come out the other side of that in a much more liberated, new sort of phase of life, where we are not, you know, we're no longer people pleasing. We are putting our own needs ahead, you know, not to the detriment of like your children or something, you know, but just putting your needs ahead of pleasing other people, basically, and putting yourself last. So it can be very empowering when you move out of that. So then I'm 45. So this I was kind of 3 years ago. So around 43, I then definitely noticed that my periods were now down to 26 days. So instead of 27, they were 27, some months 26, then they were 27, then they were 26. By the time I was 43, they were consistently 26 days, bang on. So now within 2 years, my periods had shortened. Within 3 years. So at 40, they were still 28 days. By the time I was 43, they were now down to 26 days, having had some time being 27 days. I am now experiencing at 45 that my cycles are they're either 25 or 26. So it's kind of like on and off, 1 month 25, 1 month 26. So they're getting shorter. And that will definitely mean that my progesterone is declining. My cycles will be getting shorter because I'm probably not ovulating I am ovulating. I kind of have an idea that I am, but I'm not making a robust amount of progesterone as I was before. And therefore my cycle is sort of ending earlier. That also means I'm not having enough time with progesterone as much as, you know, now we've gone from 28 days to 25 days. I'm having 3 days less with this beautiful hormone that's anti-anxiety, very calming, helps us sleep and all those lovely things. So, and it also helps to, on a physical level, it helps to prevent really heavy bleeding when your period arrives, all that clotting and flooding, because it is the blood, kind of blood thinning hormone. It helps to prevent the uterine lining from thickening too much from the effects of estrogen. And then when our periods come, they're not as heavy when we have you know, a good balanced amount of progesterone. So I was noticing, as well as noticing those very heavy periods when they did come after sort of 25, 26 days, in the lead up to my period, I was noticing that little bit of anxiety come back, the sleep issues coming back just for about 3 to 7 days before my period came. And that would be the exact time when that progesterone is just not as high as it used to be, not as robust in its production, and really starting to wane compared to, you know, 3 or 4 years before that, when it would have been much higher in amounts and lasted a bit longer for us. So that was the next kind of shift for me, was just really noticing that sleep and anxiety was creeping in the last sort of few days of my cycle or so. And then a very heavy period when it came. I was also noticing quite puffy wrists and fingers and ankles as well. So another sign that progesterone is probably on the low side. That again, what would I do if I was a client? How would I help this person? Again, it would be more about supporting that progesterone. So at 43, you're still sort of early enough in the perimenopause game to start supporting ovulation. And what I mean by that is later, you know, closer towards reaching menopause itself, it's probably less effective to use something like this, for example, a herb called Vitex, also known as Agnus Castus. This can be very helpful at supporting a woman's body to ovulate and then to ovulate well enough that they make good amounts of progesterone. Later stages of perimenopause, this herb Vitex probably wouldn't be as helpful. You'd be better off spending your money on different types of supplements at that point. But at 43, I'm still early enough in the perimenopause game for this herb Vitex to actually help me. So I started using it, and you basically take it every morning throughout the cycle, throughout the month, but you just break the day that you start your period, you break for about 6 to 7 days, and then you start taking it again, and so on. And you just keep having this sort of 5 to 7 day break every month. You should try it for a minimum of 3 months to see if it helps. And then you should stop using it after about 6 months, just have a little break and then maybe go back to it, just so that the effects don't sort of start to attenuate, where they just, you know, if you're taking it nonstop without having that little break after 6 months and then starting again, your body can kind of get used to it somewhat and it can stop being as effective. So I started to use that and it did make a difference. I started to notice, basically, instead of 25 days, I was getting an extra day of my cycles. They seemed to go up consistently to 26 days, probably wouldn't have got them up to 28 at that point, but it was good that they were going up by a day. And I was also noticing that because I take my basal body temperature every morning, I don't do it anymore. I was doing it back then. And I was noticing that I was having the spike in temperature, bang on day 14 of my cycle, which suggests that I had ovulated and made progesterone. So the next morning I was waking up and seeing this temperature spike, and I was thinking, brilliant. And I wasn't really seeing that before taking the Vitex until around day 16. So this would suggest that I wasn't ovulating until around day 15, day 16. And then I was also coming on my next period, day 25. So I was having less time that cycle with progesterone, enjoying its benefits. Whereas now that I was using the Vitex, I was ovulating a couple of days earlier, and I was also having an extra day of my cycle. So I was having more time with progesterone and probably making better amounts of it if the Vitex was really supporting my ovulation process. I also increased my magnesium glycinate in the few days before my period was due. So about a week before my period was due, I would take a little, an extra 100 or 200 milligrams every evening, making sure I was sticking with the glycine every night as well, and being really much more vigilant with my nighttime routine and getting out into natural daylight first thing in the morning in that last week leading up to my period, because that's when my hormones and my body, my nervous system was way more sensitive. And, you know, this applies to everyone. I'm obviously just talking about myself. So that really knocked a lot of those other symptoms off. My sleep started to get better in the time leading up to my period. The puffiness, ankles, feet, wrists all kind of went down as well. And I was less anxious and I was more resilient to stress in times when I wouldn't be. So that really helped. I haven't had any issues with, weight gain. It's very, very common to start increasing weight, noticing increasing in weight, particularly around the midsection, excess belly fat becoming very stubborn as well, no matter what you do. And, you know, you can't sort of get rid of it. And it comes even though you haven't changed anything. So you become really confused about it. And I would honestly say that the only reason I personally didn't have that issue, and a lot of women don't, but a lot of women do, I'd say the reason I didn't is, the only thing I can put it down to is that I do practice what I preach on all fronts. Obviously, I'm still human at times, of course, but I do practice what I preach in terms of blood sugar balancing diets. And, you know, the way I eat is in favor of blood sugar balance every single meal. I'm nourishing myself every single meal. I look at every meal as an opportunity to balance my blood sugar and nourish my body. And that's what I do. And if there's some chocolate brownies mixed in, if, you know, thrown in here and there, if there's some kettle chips with friends, you know, movie nights or whatever thrown in, fine. but I'm always nourishing my body three times a day with blood sugar balancing meals and lifting weights. I've been doing that since like early 30s. So I just think potentially those things may have helped that to not be a big thing for me. One of the biggest things with perimenopause is because the change in estrogen, the way it starts to fluctuate on this roller coaster, this erratic roller coaster, it can start to put us in a situation where the cells in our body become more prone to being insulin resistant, which means that we're not as efficient at soaking up the glucose that we break down in the body as a result of our meals containing carbohydrates and any sugars, refined carbs, any of that stuff. And if we become less efficient at soaking up that glucose from those foods, that excess glucose is stored in fat cells, predominantly around the middle. Now, had I been somebody who wasn't on top of my food, for example, and I wasn't lifting weights and those good things, and also being quite good with fasting overnight. When I say fasting, I'm talking about just a 12 to 13 hour max fast between finishing dinner the night before and then starting breakfast the next day, which is very helpful. So if I hadn't been doing those three things, the weights, the fasting overnight and the three balanced meals, possibly I would have started to notice weight gain around my middle that I just sort of couldn't control because of the fact that, so basically what I was doing was in favor of insulin sensitivity, which is improving the efficiency of how we break down and process our carbohydrates. So had I not been doing those things to support insulin sensitivity, I may have noticed this increased weight gain. Had I been eating a very high refined carb diet, low protein, low fats, low good fats, you know, low fiber, low veg, not really doing any lifting and maybe just doing cardio or HIIT, then maybe I would have noticed that increased weight around the middle. What else have I noticed? Now at 45, I'm at roughly 25 day cycles. I'm having the last period, for example, was so heavy, flooding for the first 2 days, and then it calmed itself down. But really, really heavy. And I think, you know, as time goes on with each passing month, I mean, I'm 45 and a half this month, let's say. So as each month passes and I move further through my 40s, my progesterone is probably on its way out. You know, I'm probably still managing to ovulate just about. Probably, like I said, I've stopped taking my basal body temperature now, so I don't really know when that temperature spike is happening. It could be happening around day 16 again. Coming on my next period at day 25, not much time with progesterone to help thin the lining of my uterus enough that I don't have these really flooded periods. My estrogen's probably just completely erratic. Not sure whether it's too high, whether it's too low. Judging by some of my symptoms, I have a feeling it's probably a bit lower, but it's erratic in nature. And that's going to also create that, you know, add to that picture of heavy periods. And then I'm noticing breast pain. So in the last two or three cycles, I had breast pain again when I was sort of 41. And again, that's another thing I forgot to say earlier. I knocked that on the head quite easily with, again, those changes I told you I made and the supplements and things. But now that's started to come back. So that's annoying, sort of random breast pain halfway through a cycle when you wouldn't really expect to have any and just before my period. So this, again, is a sign to me that progesterone is on the low side. So I will and have spoken to a private functional medicine trained menopause doctor. I've mentioned her before, Dr. Mandy. I've spoken to her about starting to add progesterone. She agrees I'm probably at a time now where progesterone is on the low side. So we're going to add that in. I've just actually started it the other day. And that should help me with my sleep, with anxiety, and with breast pain, and with my periods not being as crazily flooding. So I can keep you posted on that. So when it comes to the, you know, hormone therapy, we can speak to our doctors about when we're earlier in perimenopause, like, you know, me, I'm not near menopause yet. Estrogen's probably still on the high side, if anything. But we can speak to our doctors about the use of progesterone, where I said I'm at a stage now where Vitex probably isn't going to help me anymore. It may just be that taking the body identical form of progesterone will be supportive. But yeah, you know, I'm not suggesting that anyone goes out and does that. Obviously, you have to speak to a doctor in order to get that anyway. But it could be a conversation that you could have, or it could be something you could further look into and see if it might be right for you to speak with your doctor about. So you know, going through this, obviously, myself, and this is one of the reasons I wanted to specialize, is because I do like to work with people, especially if I'm in that, you know, I wanted to work with women in that sort of life stage that I would be at too. And as things evolve, as I move into life post-menopause, I may even change my specialism to helping women post-menopause, as in no longer in perimenopause. They have gone their 12 months without having a period, and now they're living life for the rest of their life in post-menopause. And that may be what I start to specialize in later, you know, 5, 6, 7 or so years from now. But what this has really done is deepened my empathy and understanding for women, with the women I work with, and being able to relate to them as well when I hear their stories and really hearing them and feeling them, because I've been there, I am there, and really understanding what to do to support them and to help them, not just through the actual, you know, scientific knowledge that I have, but also through my own experience as well, because I'm not, I still can't think of that word I'm looking for. I'm not exempt from experiencing the negative symptoms and issues. I may have the ability to really minimize them because of all, you know, the knowledge and understanding that I have and the tools I have in my toolbox. But I'm still there. I'm not, you know, I'm not completely exempt from experiencing it. So beyond, you know, I get to help women beyond just the textbook, essentially the training, the clinical training that we have. I'm actually helping them from my heart, and really, you know, as I said, it's sort of deepened my empathy and understanding. So I've always been a down to earth practitioner anyway. I've always had that empathetic and realistic approach with my clients. It's something that does come naturally to me anyway. But being in the throes of something that my clients are also dealing with, it just deepens. It really does deepen it, I suppose. So as I said already, the kind of things that have made me feel, helped me to feel better, supporting that circadian rhythm. So that consistent going to bed and wake time, the hour before going to bed, having no bright lights on, you know, ideally not watching the TV or using any, I'd put my phone away by then, like charging it in a different room, not to see it again until after I've woken up the next day, not looking at laptops or anything, and just have that downtime, that little lovely unwind where I have dim lighting on, maybe some meditation music, do some sleep support yoga poses like yin yoga and things, or just do a meditation. Maybe I also read a book in dim lighting. I have a really lowly lit Kindle that doesn't emit any blue light, and then I just have my little Himalayan salt lamp on while I read that at night, and that just helps me fall asleep. So doing those things have been really, really helpful, making sure I get out first thing in the morning. Within 20 to 30 minutes of waking, I would go outside, usually just throw some clothes on, go for a walk, come back, have a shower, have breakfast, sort myself out for the day. Or if I didn't have time for a walk, I'd just go and sit in the garden. If you have a garden or a balcony, you can do that for at least 10 minutes with, you know, my green tea from the morning. So these things are things I will never, ever stop. They mean so much to me, having that wind down routine and getting up in the morning and going outside. It's just like brushing my teeth now. It's something I just do automatically. If I'm ever in a situation or away and I can't do those things, it's, you know, I do just go with it. I'm not, you don't have to be perfect 24/7, but I do just, these are so natural. These habits are so natural to me now that I just kind of can't not do them. So that's kind of where you want to get with these kind of habits, is to make them just part of what you do, part of your behavior. And then managing blood sugar, so, so important. And that can sound quite complicated. What does, you know, managing blood sugar? Really, that is about eating at least 30 grams of pure protein with every meal, particularly breakfast, not waiting too long to eat your breakfast after waking. So having a 12 to 13 hour fast every night between the time that you finish your dinner at night and when you start your breakfast, but trying to avoid this, like, you know, tendency to want to push your morning meal out to like 11, 12 o'clock because you're doing maybe the 16 hour fast, or you've read that book, Fast Like a Girl, and you're thinking, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. This is going to help me lose weight. That doesn't necessarily help the perimenopausal woman. We're already highly cortisoled because of the shift and changes in estrogen and progesterone. We really don't want to add fuel to that fire by stressing the body out, by starving it essentially until like 11 or 12 o'clock and bringing those stress hormones up again. So really getting in there, ideally with an hour or maximum 2 hours of waking, with that good dose of 30 grams of protein, some good fats as well in that lovely breakfast, and some fiber, of course, some ground flax seeds, some ground chia seeds, maybe other seeds, vegetables, salad, whatever it might be. And then again, a nice balanced meal at lunch with your 30, 40 grams of protein, again for dinner, and then having that fast overnight and not working out fasted. This is something I would have done in my 20s, early 30s, but in our 40s and beyond, training fasted just doesn't work. It's too much stress on our hormones, basically. And again, you know, impacting those cortisol levels that we just don't want to do. So having some protein, a good sort of 20, 25 grams of protein before we train, especially particularly if we're lifting weights or doing HIIT or something, and then recovery food after the workout as well. Focus supplementation, really getting to the crux of what support is needed, is very helpful. So sometimes we can, you know, get hooked into certain special perimenopause supplements that promise the world, but really keeping it simple. So when I say keep it simple, I mean magnesium glycinate. It will be your best friend. 300 to 400 milligrams every night. You can also take a couple of hundred milligrams in the morning just to help support your nervous system throughout the day, help you feel more resilient to stress. You can consider adding in some glycine at night, maybe 1,000 to 3,000 milligrams every night. But again, I don't like to give blanket advice on supplements because some supplements interact with medication. So if you are taking any medications, make sure you ask your doctor first, or, you know, really find out. If you're working with a practitioner like myself, I would know any interactions, and obviously not, you know, suggest certain supplements if there's interactions, but do find out just in case. You know, making sure you're on top of your B vitamins, your B12, your B6, your folate, making sure your ferritin levels are good. If you get those tested, making sure you've got good vitamin D levels. And really just, yeah, maybe looking at thyroid health as well. I've got a whole other episode on that, so which you can listen to. And nervous system support. So nervous system regulation is so, so key. One of the most important tools, really, really is, over and above anything else. We can also, you know, we can obviously DIY it, but we can also use therapists. So I, for example, love, when it comes to the DIY stuff, I love using the 4-6 breathing, which is so simple. That's where you're breathing in to a count of four, breathing out to a count of six, 3 to 5 minutes every morning, every afternoon, every evening before bed, just tapping into it throughout the day, focusing on your breath. Like after I've recorded this podcast, I will always sit, usually with my hands on my heart, and just do the 4-6 breathing for about 3 minutes. And it's a really lovely way to calm your nervous system and switch off that stress response, helping to rebalance those stress hormones. Yoga, gentle yoga. I tend to just do like 10, 15 minutes here and there. I find that so much more beneficial sometimes than trying to get myself to a class, which I love. But if I can't always do that, I like to just have my mat rolled out at home and I'll do like 15 minutes here and there, as I said. I love guided meditations when I have the space, the time. Yoga nidra, body scan meditations, really, really lovely. Journaling. I love to just write in my journal. Didn't do it this morning. Write in my journal in the morning, even if it's just a page, could be anything, just a bit of rubbish that's in my head, whatever I'm thinking about. It might just be, thank you for life, thank you for this, thank you for that. Just to sort of remind me that things are good, you know, even if it doesn't feel like it, because it really can feel like that some days. You could, for no apparent reason, we can feel like everything is so bad. And sometimes just sitting there journaling can help you sort of realize what is good, and that, you know, you close that notebook and you can feel so much better. Morning time is for silence for me. I don't touch my phone. I mean, when I say silence, I like to put morning, sort of calming morning music on while I make my tea. I light some incense. I love the smell of this particular incense I got from Thailand last year. It just really calms me and makes me feel happy. I make my green tea and then I sit down, I grab my journal, and I don't touch my phone until I've done those things. I also get daylight before I touch my phone. So there's a saying I heard another practitioner say last week, sunlight before screen light. Brilliant. Exactly that. Daylight. You know, we don't always have sun in the morning. So daylight before screen light. And that is my little motto every morning. Daylight before screen light. Don't pick up that phone until you've been outside. And then you look at your phone. So that is what I do. And that makes a massive difference for my nervous system. The mornings I grab my phone and start scrolling, and before I know it, I'm reading a story about, for example, this morning I came across a story on Instagram of this horrible man sitting on the London Underground just shouting off, you know, racist slurs on the train. And I could feel my heart just beating. And it was before I'd even been outside, before I'd put my music on, lit my incense, made my tea. And I thought, well, there you go. This is what a lot of people are starting their day on, whether it's scrolling, whether it's a stressful WhatsApp or an email from work or a manager or, you know, or a colleague. If you're starting your day like that, imagine the rest of your day just follow suit. So I really was telling myself off this morning, don't do that. It was just a blip, grabbing my phone. And then other little things that I might go and see a therapist for. I love craniosacral therapy. So if you don't know what that means, what it is, I can't really explain it, to be honest. Google it and have a little read. I see a therapist, a craniosacral therapist, about once a month. Really, really love that. I find it really calming for my nervous system. I love to go and see my osteopath every few months as well. Thai massage when I can. You know, these things are really nice to have. I'd say the craniosacral therapy is probably more of the nervous system benefit that I get every month from doing that. And of course, you know, getting support from your community, being part of a community, getting, you know, laughing with friends, listening to funny podcasts or comedians that you love, like just having those things on in the background. Whenever I do that, which is, I need to do it more often, but whenever I put on my favorite comedians in the background while I'm washing up or clearing up the dishes, whatever it might be, I have such fun. And I think, gosh, this makes me feel so much better about life, just having this stuff on in the background. So things like that can make a huge difference. You know, just taking time out from your sort of mental environment and laughing at random things. And then just, yeah, making sure you're also prioritizing training. If you're, you know, if you're working out, that's sort of helping you to build muscle, but not sacrifice those, sacrifice your muscle, basically. So if you're focusing on lots of cardio, lots of high intensity interval training, these might not be as effective for you right now. They can be more stress inducing versus walking, getting out in nature, some gentle yoga and lifting weights 2 to 3 times a week for sort of 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever you've got. Those things are really powerful for your nervous system, and supporting your hormones and supporting your weight and body composition as well. And, you know, going through perimenopause, it's always a work in progress. It's always a work in progress for me. It's always, symptoms are always evolving, as I said. And our approach likely has to change as well. What may have worked 5 years ago in your 30s, in your 20s, whatever it might be, may not work anymore. And sometimes we have to accept that and say, okay, well, what does work? What will work? What will be more beneficial right now? And be open, you know, be open to changing the way we do things. And of course, I work with women one-to-one. So it really does help if you, you know, if you have the budget for, it's like anything, like if I have the budget for some other kind of therapist, it will always be more beneficial than me trying to do it on my own. But I'm hoping that this podcast does really help as many women as possible to get a better understanding of what they can be doing and then go off and do those things and make a big difference. And I know I've had, you know, emails from some of you guys in the past over the last few weeks and months that have said that. And it's so heartwarming. And I just love it. That's exactly why I'm doing this. That's exactly what I want to hear. But of course, if you do feel that you would like one-to-one support, really getting diving deep into your own unique case, your history and what you need help with and getting personalized, you know, advice, supplement advice, for example, and you have the budget for it, then of course, I'm here for that as well. You can simply book a discovery call via my website or drop me an email to francesca@francescaliparotti.com. So I hope this has been helpful and not just too much of a big rant, but I hope it's been helpful. And I would love to hear from you. Of course, if you've got any questions or thoughts or comments at all, please do drop me a line. I love to hear from you. Anything you want me to help you with or address on an episode, just let me know. So thank you so much for listening and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit and consider leaving a rating and a review as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy, or you'll also find the link in the show notes.